FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's 6:28:18. Well, energy always on everyone's mind, not just politics, believe it or not. We try to avoid politics whenever possible. But energy, what's going to power your car in 10 years? What's going to power it in 3 years? We know for now, gasoline, internal combustion engines, that's where it's at. But there is a shift taking place. And as always, join the show, make my day, send me an email. The address is kl@kerrylutz.com. So with me now, talking about different battery types and what's down the pike for electric vehicles, or EVs as they're known, is Gregor Gregerson. Gregor, you're founder of Silver Bullion and Safe House, and we are thrilled to have you back on.
Thank you, Kerry.
So you were telling me pre-call that a lot of stuff is going on in the battery world, and you're thinking lithium probably isn't going to be that big a deal down the road.
Well, if we look at batteries, you know, basically we have three components to it. We have the anode, we have the cathode, and we have the liquid between it, which tends to be the lithium. But in some ways, the lithium is called a lithium-ion battery, but there's not that much lithium by weight in one of these batteries. It might represent maybe 2% of the weight. Mm-hmm. So, and there are many ways of getting lithium. So getting the right purity and so on, you know, it's definitely something that has already gone up in price by 300 or 400%. But I'm more excited about the other electrical vehicle metals, especially nickel and cobalt.
Yeah. So cobalt, there seems to be a fairly acute shortage of, isn't there?
Yes, very much so. If you're familiar with cobalt, essentially 60% of it is coming out of the Congo. And the Congo has a lot of political instability. It's a very corrupt government. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of pressure right now to have the cobalt mined in a way which is considered acceptable to Western media to some degree. I think there's quite a bit of politics behind all of this, but without getting into too much detail, no matter what, cobalt is a limited metal. A lot of it is coming from one country, which is not very stable, potentially. And it is a necessary metal in the new generation of batteries, not because it stores energy, but because it keeps the battery from burning up.
Mm-hmm. So it's a kind of like a catalyst control mechanism, if you will, right?
Yeah, so essentially the anode of batteries, it's mostly made of graphite. And it's not a very exciting thing because it's already doing a good job. Almost all of the research in batteries is on the cathode side. And there are 5 or 6 different battery chemistries which use different metals. And over time, these have improved to various degrees. And there are 2 chemistries nowadays which have really turned out to be the batteries types which have the most potential and are essentially the ones on which the entire industry is pointing now. And both of these chemistries make a heavy use of both nickel and cobalt.
Mm-hmm. I see. So there's so many developments in batteries. I mean, you hear it literally every day. There's something else, right? Space is a little bit confusing. How do you find your way around it?
Yeah, yes, and I think the best way to explain that is to sort of summarize where I sort of got into all of this electrical vehicle story. It all started last year when I was at a conference in Jekyll Island, and one of the presenters was Mike Beck, who was a director at Rothschild in his prior work. And one of the things he did is he bought uranium mine in Africa for about $4 million or so, and he sold it for $2.4 billion about 4 years later. So he definitely had a very good grasp of value and the metal industry in general, especially energy. And he was presenting about electric vehicles, and he was focusing especially on lithium, cobalt, nickel, and to some degree copper, and explaining the market dynamics of all of these things. And during that presentation, I really got was taken aback how much has happened in this industry and how quickly things are changing. And that's how I got so excited about it. And one of the key points to understand is that there's a cost in battery power, which is, say, a kilowatt hour for a battery. And it used to be almost $1,000 per kilowatt hour in 2011. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, that cost has come down to about $150. So we had an 85% reduction in price since 2011, which is why suddenly we're having electric cars, which are much, much more performant than what we would have had 8 or 9 years ago. And as these batteries are becoming cheaper and cheaper, the energy density is becoming higher, which means they have a greater range, and the price keeps on falling. So as these cars continue to improve, we are eventually going to hit parity where for the same amount of range and comfort, you can basically get an electric car or you can get a gasoline car. Mm-hmm. Now, that equivalent point is different depending on the country. In some countries, there are more taxes and other items. But even without subsidies, we will probably see in China by 2020 or so, in the US by 2022 or so, we sort of would expect the parity to be reached. And when that happens, there are a number of advantages of electric cars, which makes them very appealing. One of it is that there are no fluids inside the car.
Yes.
It doesn't even need oil. It doesn't have a transmission. It doesn't have an engine per se in the traditional sense, because the engines are almost built inside the wheels.
Right.
So there's very, very little maintenance. And the electricity cost is probably around 1/5 or 1/6 of the equivalent cost of gasoline.
Mm-hmm.
An electrical motor is around 10 times more efficient than a gasoline engine.
Correct.
But the big downside is that batteries tend to store a lot less energy per unit of volume or weight than gasoline is. So whereas with cars, basically whoever has the best engine tends to have the better car. With electric vehicle, whoever has the best battery tends to have the best car. So all of the research and development is really focused towards building the best battery now.
Yeah. So where is like Tesla in this race to build the best battery? Are they pretty much ahead, or are they the Chinese really blowing them away? What's the real story on that?
Well, there are essentially five chemistries that are relevant in the industry right now. But of those five, only two are the ones that are going to, going to be important in the future. One of it is called the nickel manganese cobalt chemistry,
mm-hmm.
and one is lithium nickel cobalt aluminium chemistry. Tesla is using nickel cobalt aluminium mostly, but in the future they will probably switch to nickel manganese cobalt. Now you will notice in both cases there's both cobalt and nickel in it. It's just that in one chemistry you have aluminium, in one you have manganese. So the more important point really is that in both of these chemistries, nickel is what keeps the charge.
Mm-hmm.
The more nickel you can put in the battery, the more power it can store.
Mm-hmm.
Cobalt is there to keep the nickel stable and prevent it from burning up. And manganese in this case basically allows for power to be unleashed more effectively. But the key aspect here is essentially that the more nickel you can put in the battery, the more powerful it becomes and the cheaper, because nickel is about 6 times cheaper than cobalt. So the first batteries that were built are called NMC111, which means there's the equal parts of nickel, cobalt, and manganese. And Nowadays, companies like Tesla and so on, they have a ratio of around 60% nickel, 20% cobalt, and 20% manganese, or a similar ratio when it comes to NCA. And the industry is now trying to reduce the amount of cobalt and increase the amount of nickel even more. And the gold standard now is called NMC 811, which means that 80% will be nickel, 10% cobalt, and 10% manganese.
Okay.
And as you go towards NMC 811, you should be able to reduce the price by another 30 to 40% just from a performance gain point of view and reduction in cost because nickel is cheaper. So you would basically be able to hit that magic point when electric cars can start becoming cheaper than combustion cars. And it's these chemistries are chemistries which take 10 to 15 years or so to really go from a lab into live production. So even though we are hearing about new battery inventions almost every month, most of these breakthroughs tend to have some practical deficit typically. But even if we were to find the perfect sort of breakthrough, it will still take probably 8 to 9 to 10 years for it to actually show up in actual cars, because you would have to build the factories that then build these batteries in volume and so on and so on. And these batteries have to be tested for a long time, because you might remember the Samsung phones which started catching fire.
I remember.
If you don't have a good thermal management on these batteries, and even if one battery in a million starts catching fire, you have a big problem. So the industry basically has to make sure that as they reduce the amount of cobalt and increase nickel, they don't cut any corners, which is going to cause a battery to burn up.
Mm. Right. So of all these batteries, and you're saying that in 2022, it's going to reach parity between the cost of a battery as opposed to gasoline. Is that over the life of the car that's going to be, or how do we measure parity exactly?
No, so it will be the cost of the car compared to equivalent gasoline car. So if you're going to your car dealer, mm-hmm. Right now, it is still more expensive to buy an electric car than it is to buy an equivalent gasoline car.
Yeah, they subsidize it here in the States, $7,500 per EV. So we're not going to need that anymore? Is that what you're telling me?
Yes, that's where we're heading. Mm-hmm. Essentially, without subsidies, even taking away those subsidies, we will be getting to a point in different countries are going to have different times when that happens. In the US, according to Vale, which is one of the biggest mining companies of, among other things, nickel, they're expecting this to happen in 2024 or so. In Europe, it's likely to happen earlier because of different...
higher cost of gasoline and everything else. So the yes. operating costs will also figure into it as well. So
yes. Mm-hmm. And you have to realize that it will be quite a dramatic shift, and there's a lot of interest against this because obviously the gasoline industry is not really looking forward to it. But you would also have a drastic decrease in maintenance.
Yeah.
So an electric car needs very little maintenance. It has no oils that needs to be changed.
Yeah.
It is very simple.
Parts. You don't have to replace brake pads because you're using, reverse motors there. And like Tesla says, their brake pads, their brakes never wear out. So, and you got much less moving parts, like less than a tenth of the number of moving parts. We all know the more moving parts in a system, the more prone to breakage it is. So once they reach close parity, even if they're not an exact parity, Gregor, if they're 10% more, say, your cost savings in fuel are going to more than make up for that, aren't they?
Yes. On top of that, it takes about 50% less space to build an electric car and about 50% less capital investment to build an electric car compared to a gasoline engine. Yeah. And these are statistics coming from Ford Motor Company, by the way. So it is a lot cheaper to build them as long as you get the battery figured out.
I gotcha. So it's all about the battery. So right now Tesla is doing these gigapacks and stuff, the gigabattery factory. Where are they in the race for the better battery?
Well, I think nobody knows exactly because Tesla has made some announcement recently where they sort of indicated that they might be able to remove cobalt completely, which I'm sure they're still quite a bit far away from that. The industry right now is moving towards reducing cobalt as much as possible. But the consensus in the industry is that you'll probably need at least 10% of the cathode weight in cobalt for the foreseeable future. Nickel is essentially the metal which all of these batteries are using. So that's where we are with Tesla. Now, Tesla is planning to get about half of their savings from better chemistries, and the other half will just be economies of scale. So the Gigafactory essentially is a humongous factory, and they're planning to be able to reduce costs by about 30% just by having such huge production facilities. Of course, 30% depends a little bit what your base is, but they will be able to produce these cheaply. Now, can Tesla produce it cheaper than the Chinese? I'm not sure.
Well, if they can stay ahead in the technology, then the answer is maybe. If they can avoid bankruptcy, their situation reminds me of Chrysler when they bet the company on the K car. And even though the K car was kind of a piece of garbage, the fact is they won the bet and the company carried on for a number of years more. The Tesla 3, they bet the company on it, or Musk has betted on it. And hey, if you can really buy an electric vehicle for $35,000, $40,000, get back $7,500 from Uncle Sam in the form of a subsidy, and it's really, in many respects, a better car, they might win that bet, huh?
Yes. And I think what really changed in the last year is the expectation. I mean, you go back, say, 3 or 4 years ago, we had some surveys in Germany, and less than 1% of people wanted to buy an electric car. Mm. Nowadays, around 40% of Germans want to buy an electric car. And that was about a survey done 3 months ago. My guess is that now it will be much higher than that, because a number of cities such as Munich and Hamburg will actually ban diesel cars. And, you know, German companies, Volkswagen, Audi, and so on, they have sold a lot of diesel cars. My dad bought a Mercedes about 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. He's been driving it in Munich, and he might no longer be able to drive it in Munich now.
Really?
So, yes. So we are having some really big problems now with diesel because cities are banning diesel cars because they found out that they're actually a lot more harmful to health than they assumed before. And that's leaving a lot of people stranded. So that's costing Volkswagen a ton of money. And there were some other things that Volkswagen did which hurt their reputation quite a bit. I don't know if you heard about the monkey scandal.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Just tell us about it. Yeah.
Yes, where they essentially took monkeys and see how long it will take until they were poisoned by exhaust gases as in experiments and so on. So as all these things kind of come up, Volkswagen sort of decided that they might as well jump on the EV wagon now rather than later, and they realized that they have a lot of catching up to do. Volkswagen said that Tesla is the number one competitor now. Mm-hmm. Not because they're producing a lot of car, not because they're profitable, but because they have by far the best technology, not just in terms of electric vehicle, but also in terms of, say, self-driving autopilot and so on. So
there's been a lot of accidents recently, though, Gregor, or not a lot, but accidents have occurred that are really capturing the headlines. So it's been a definite negative for Tesla in that regard. But yes, in terms of their database as far as autonomous vehicle development, they're far ahead of anybody else.
Yes. But if you look at Tesla definitely makes also headlines, but Volkswagen announced that they will be retrofitting 16 factories towards electric vehicle. And they bought $24 billion worth of EV metals. And when they say they're buying $24 billion, they don't mean they just bought $24 billion worth of these metals, because it doesn't exist. What they really did is they bought up future production.
Yeah. So futures contracts, right?
Yeah, they're called offtake contracts. Basically, BMW, Volkswagen, they will go to a mine or to a major producer such as Glencore, and they would say that over the next 10 years, I'm going to buy 50 tons of cobalt every month from you. And they will then use that to basically run, build the batteries that are needed.
Mm-hmm.
So in the last year, the more you research this, the more you realize how big this change really is. But there's been a humongous change towards electric vehicle. And instead of being an oddity, it is now perceived as being the way forward in the industry. And so Tesla might become the biggest car company, or it might fail. But no matter what, electric vehicle is going to be here to stay. And the biggest proponent of electric vehicle is China.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at what they've been doing strategically, they've been buying up or trying to get as much access to electric vehicle resources and base metals as possible. They already have quite a bit of graphite in China anyway, but they're building up their resources in China, say One Belt, One Road initiative, the New Silk Road, also investment Chinese are doing across the world, especially the developing world. A lot of these things are, among other things, meant to ensure that China has enough raw materials. And cobalt is one of the strategic metals that they're looking for, as well as class A nickel eventually. Because the reason why nickel is so interesting is most people look at nickel and they think nickel is just a base metal and there's plenty of supply and there's no reason for it to go up. But if you're trying to make batteries, you can only use a subtype of nickel, which is called a class A nickel. Class one. And this type of nickel basically is a pure form of nickel. It ideally it's in a powder and it gets basically dissolved in sulfuric acid. You make nickel sulfide out of it, and then you use that to make the battery. Now, about 60% of the nickel produced worldwide is not battery grade. It's not pure enough to be used in batteries, and it tends to go into steel production. So worldwide, we have about 2 million tons that are being produced per year, and only around 900 or 850,000 tons can actually be used for batteries.
Mm-hmm.
So now an interesting point is, if we are going towards this 811 chemistry, which everybody is striving towards, that means you will need to have 8 parts of nickel, class A, class one, for every part of cobalt.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the worldwide cobalt production is about 110,000 tons.
Mm.
So you multiply 110 times 8 and you get 880, which is about the available supply for nickel. So when people tell me that we're really running short of cobalt, well, that might be true. But once you make the numbers, you'll actually realize that if all of the cobalt produced in the future is used for batteries, we actually need we're running short of nickel as well. And of course, to make that assumption, you have to realize where the industry is heading, and that nickel has these different type of grades, and that only the battery-grade nickel is of use. And the other point I'd like to point out is cobalt has already gone up by about 300% in the last 2 years.
Right.
Nickel, on the other hand, is at around less than 30% of its 2007 high. In 2007, it reached around over $50,000 per ton. And right now it's trading at around $14,000 to $15,000. So it's still relatively cheap on a historical basis, but it's starting to go up. It went up 20% this year so far, but I think it has a lot more to go up. And I was talking with some mining CEOs, especially in the nickel area, some of the junior miners, and they've been telling me that for class one nickel, for the battery-grade nickel, your average cost tends to be around $16,000 per ton anyway. So it really is a cheap metal, and you have a huge potential for it. So I think it's something which the wider investment community has not recognized yet. And I think the risk-reward is extremely good for nickel.
Mm-hmm. So you're not like overly bullish about lithium long-term?
To be honest, I don't understand lithium enough. You can find lithium in seawater, and we've got some improvements in filtering technologies, whereby it might be possible to filter out the lithium in desalinization plants for water.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not sure if that type of lithium can be used for batteries, but assuming you can, lithium is just not as rare as a metal. It's just a matter of mining it economically and finding the right sources. So in that hindsight, I'm not as much of a bull on lithium. And there might be a lot of things which I don't understand in that sector, but I think the case for nickel and the supply case for cobalt just makes a lot more sense to me.
It definitely sounds like it. So just quickly, views on precious metals, they've been getting slammed lately. Are you still bullish?
Oh, yeah. I'm bullish because typically what happens is when the world has more and more uncertainties, then gold and silver tends to go up as people move into safe haven assets. And this time around, we haven't really seen this. The world is getting more uncertain. I mean, we have a trade war, which has been brewing for a while, which seems to be getting worse. And at some point, the stock market have to, in my opinion, have a big correction. I do believe that we are really overdue for a big recession and or depression. And once that happens, quite a bit of money is going to flow back into precious metals, especially physical precious metals. And I should say that once we have the crisis hit us, gold and silver might also go down for a while. But as it gets worse, gold and silver will go up. And physical especially, it's a type of assets that you want to own. When a crisis become worsens, and especially if you go back to a situation like in 2008, where financial institutions might fail, and where the amount of over leverage and the amount of interdependence between financial institutions might mean that you might lose the money that you have in your bank account.
Mm-hmm.
Because in my opinion, this time around, there's not the political will to bail out the banks again. And if the banks don't get bailed out, then we're going to have a bail-in. And a bail-in means that the depositor, the person who puts the money in the bank, is probably going to lose a large portion of that money. And as that happens, people are going to want to find somewhere else to store some money, and gold and silver is going to be a big recipient of that money.
Mm-hmm. Well, interesting. So the more things change, the more they stay the same. Gregor, I know that people out there, you're going to want to connect with Gregor on the web, find out more about what you are doing, Gregor. How do people find you?
Well, they can go to silverbullion.com.sg. And that is our website. We started off as a precious metal dealer. We became a storage facility storing around $300 million worth of gold and silver now. We have a peer-to-peer lending program, which allows you to get loans at around 3% or so using your gold or silver as collateral if you wish to do so. And the latest thing now is electric vehicles metals. Essentially, when you buy something from us, you can buy a 10-ounce gold bar, 500-ounce silver bar, or you can get a 2-ton nickel bulk bag. Mm-hmm. And you get a photo for it and so on. And we basically have a liquid market on it. So you can buy it now, you can sell it at a later price. And we essentially have some of the lowest holding costs in the industry for you to actually own physical nickel, because it's very expensive to do so with future contracts due to contango. And as far as I know, there's no real ETF out there which allows you to invest in nickel directly. So I would really encourage people to look into EV, because I think it's something which will definitely go up more.
Hey, well, Kyle Bass, like 7-8 years ago, bought up a warehouse full of, he filled a warehouse with United States nickels. And the government said, why did you want $1 million worth of nickels? And he says, I like nickels. And as a result, he's been sitting on it a long time. At one point, he bought it up because the price of copper, you know, nickel is like 85% copper, 15% nickel, a U.S. Nickel coin. And he bought it up for the copper content, because that, at the time, copper was, the nickel was trading at like 80%. The metal content of a single U.S. nickel was worth, 30-40% higher than the melt value was worth 8 cents, and the nickel is worth 5 cents. And so it was a good buy. Subsequently, nickel went back down, copper went back down, and now it's getting close to par. There's a website, if you want to see what any coin is worth in terms of its melt value, called coinflation.com. And that'll tell you every coin that's ever been produced. And I can tell you right now, a nickel made between 1946 and 2014, subsequent to that date, they were, after 2015, they're mostly zinc, just like pennies. But right now, a nickel is still worth 87.18% in terms of its melt value, 87.18% of its face value, meaning it's worth like 4.5 cents or so. And I take it back, it's 75% copper, 25% nickel. So at some point, when the price of nickel starts really going up, because these EVs really take off, your nickels are going to be worth, again, a lot more than a nickel. So that was my point there, a little bit long-winded. Anyway, Gregor, it's always great to have you on. If you've got questions or comments, be a part of the show. The best part of my day is getting your emails, kl@carrylutz.com, Twitter feed @CarryLutz. Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. Don't forget, if you're on YouTube, please click the subscribe button and the bell, because that'll help our rankings. Gregor, we'll talk to you again real soon. Really appreciate you coming back on.
Yep. Thank you for having me.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.